The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Mm-hmm. So when did it happen to where the romance came into y'all friendship?
I love this because this is about to be so Tasha. One night I just told him, I said, you got feelings for me. He cannot stand when I tell that story. I said, I did. I said, you have feelings for me. Now, how were bold you, is that? Why can't I just say I got feelings for you?
Because you had to project it. And that was good that you did it like that.
I sure did.
Because it wasn't like you were pursuing him. You made him confess his
own. That he wanted to pursue me. I helped him out. I gave him some help.
You gave him an alley-oop. And you said, you told him.
You got feelings for me.
And what he said?
He could not disagree. I said, I think we need to discuss this. We're going to have to talk about this. It was the truth. Look at us now. Come on, 7 years down the road. Ladies, a little tip.
Yeah, tell them.
You're not being too aggressive. You're just like helping. It's helping. We call to be helped. We call to help, right?
Yeah, y'all supposed to be the helpmate.
Yeah.
And so you told him how he felt about you.
Yes.
And he said.
He couldn't disagree.
Every second that escapes without you here with me keeps my heart anticipating till I finally see.
When I made my vows, I told God that I was going to take care of this gift.
All my life I've been waiting for you. Girl, you know I've been praying for you. Been writing these love letters to you.
So I fight for that future in the present. You know what I'm saying?
That was good.
Congratulations to the ones who found love, for the hope and new beginnings from heaven above. I await my future wifey. I pray that it won't be too long. Too long. Every second that
it... Welcome to the Dear Future Wifey Podcast. I'm your host, LaTerris R. Whitfield. Listen, are you still shacking up with us? If you're still shacking up with us, come on, can we get a commitment? Hit that subscription button and subscribe. Make sure you turn on your notification bell so you'll be notified about upcoming episodes. Listen, this season has been absolutely amazing. I've been reading all the comments on YouTube, all the DMs. Thank y'all so much for joining me on the Love Blueprint Masterclass. Gosh, that was so healing for all of us. Well, let me tell you something. I'll be saying some prayers on my podcast. When I launched this in 2020, I had some specific people that I wanted to talk to on the podcast. And let me tell you, God heard my prayers. And so without further ado, welcome to the Dear Future Wifey Podcast. My homie, Tasha Cobbs Leonard. How you doing, Queen? We in this thing.
Finally made it.
But you came without your husband. Where he at?
Listen, I ain't going to tell you who, but they canceled his flight. I ain't going to say no names.
We ain't going to throw the airline under the bus because I may need y'all to sponsor one of my podcast episodes.
Right. They going to say no names.
They
canceled the man's flight this morning.
He said he was ready, huh? He said he had prepared.
So I get to tell all the stories my way. I'm going to enjoy this.
Well, listen, man, I told you when you came in that I worked with you when I did, during my season as a national playwright, director, mm-hmm. producer. I did a production for Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship.
Yes.
And you graced the stage. And of course, you sang Break Every Chain.
Mm-mm. Come on.
Let me tell you something. Did you ever believe that that song would be as big as it became?
You know what? I have a story behind that song. I knew that it would impact people's lives the way that it did.
How did you know that?
I did not, because I personally experienced it myself. The testimony behind that song is one night I was down south in Georgia. I'm from Georgia. And me and my team had done a concert in like Warner Robins, Georgia, something like that. And I was driving. I like to drive. So I'm driving everybody else snoring. I'm driving. And in that season, I was really dealing with deep depression and anxiety and fear during that time. And not a lot of people knew it. So while I was driving, I would just have a playlist playing and this song Break Every Chain came on, and immediately it started to just chip away at this dark season that I was in. And so I would listen to it for 24 hours for like the next 2 weeks, nonstop. And that was how I began my healing towards freedom from that season of depression. So people ask me all the time, do you get tired of singing it? No, I don't, because I know what that song in particular can do in your life. I'm a living testimony. So the testimony behind that song is, that's the reason why I can sing it the way I do.
I want to ask you then, because I know as an artist, you've heard probably tons of testimonies surrounding mm-hmm. that song. What kind of feedback have you heard? What kind of testimonies?
Oh, I mean, everything from healing, miraculous healing, to people being set free from, like I just said, dark seasons of depression and fear. Families being mended. Like I remember a husband. So I get these, don't send me DMs, y'all, but I check them sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get these testimonies, and this one just stood out to me. There was a husband who was in the hospital, very, very sick. And the wife chose to play Break Every Chain in his bedroom, nonstop, experience complete healing in that hospital. Like those, they just stand. And that one is probably about 9-10 years old, but I never forget these testimonies, and I have them in the back of my head every time I'm singing that song. And I have an expectation that when this song is released in a room, somebody is about to get a miracle.
You said I have an expectation.
Yeah, I do.
So you don't get up on stage, you sing that song just like another song on the set list.
Oh no.
You say, when I sing this song, mm-hmm. I need for an encounter to take place.
Yep. I have an expectation. And sometimes I have to remind the room that, hey, this is not our favorite song from the radio. It's not a cool little jingle. Like, this is a declaration, and we expect God to do something when we sing it. Yeah. For real.
Tasha, can I trouble you to have you sing a little snippet of it?
There is power in the name of Jesus to break every chain, break every chain, break every chain.
So what made you, when you recorded it, was it a moment in the studio where you were crying while you were recording it, or what happened? Or was you just trying to just perfect in the studio? Like what happened on the recording?
It was a live recording. So that album is Grace. That's the album. Yep. It has Break Every Chain, Confidence, Happy, all those songs mm-hmm. on there. It was the one song that we were sold on. Like everything else, I was like, hey, we might have to write some stuff, but this song is going to be the one that was. So it was the one song that we were fully sold. This is going to be on this album. And in the room in that moment, the same thing I feel now, 12 years later, when we sing that 12 song.
12 years later.
Is literally what happened in the room in that moment. We could barely move on. Yep. Do we need to get our tissues already? Because I feel like this is about to
end. I've been sitting over here. It's over here. Because I'm just going back in my mind mm-hmm. about even when I first heard that song. And it's like, it's one of those songs that truly arrest you.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't listen to that song. It's just like, oh, that's a cool little song. And you mm-hmm. just start singing it like a jingle or something. No, when you hear it, it makes you reflect on every stronghold that the enemy has placed mm-hmm. on your mind, on your family, generational curses.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to that song and having the privilege to hear you sing it live in a play mm-hmm. that I wrote, and I'm sitting up there listening. I'm going, wow. And then the graphic behind you, we put these little chains that just kept spinning around.
Oh, wow.
And they were broken links and stuff. And I was sitting there listening. I was like, this girl is bad. Like, I don't want to stay on that because it's going, we ain't going to get through the interview because.
I remember that though.
Yeah, it's these moments.
That.
It's these encounters that take place. And that's why gospel music is not like any other music, and it's just a powerful thing, which is interesting. It just dawned on me. Do you get controversy when you begin to collaborate with other secular artists? Because I remember you collaborated with Nicki Minaj on the mm-hmm, song, right? Mm-hmm. What was the thought process behind that?
For sure. I don't know if it's so much thought as it is obedience. Like I'll say something about me. I'm not walking through a door that God didn't provide for me. I'm not going to stand on any platform that he didn't tell me to stand on. I am not going to do anything with this ministry that he's entrusted me with that he has not given me instruction to do. So it's less of thinking and more of obedience. And I have this thing, Kenny, if Kenny was here, he would tell you, before I could think of logical reasons to give God a no, I just go ahead and say yes. Like, so people ask me all the time, well, how did you start that business today? What made you do that? I just said yes before I could think of a reason to say no. And before you know it, you out in the middle of the water. You can't turn around.
You said that's the best advice. Before I think of logical reasons to say no,
I just go ahead and say, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. And so even with those collaborations, like I have collaborations with Sierra and Common. And I mean, you know, and it's all divinely orchestrated by God that we reach a people who may not come to our churches. You know, I remember the first song that because we have me and Nikki got two songs. Yeah, I did two. One on her album that just came out called Blessings. And it's really been a blessing to people. But that first song, I remember we were recording my album, Heart, Passion, Pursuit. And we were in the studio. And back then, I was just posting clips, like, just, you know, y'all hear this song we're about to do. I'm just excited, yeah. Right? And so Nikki sees one of the clips to the song, I'm Getting Ready. And she sends me a message because we communicated often. We,
oh, so
we
actually knew each
have
other?
A friendship. Yes.
Okay, so y'all knew each other before y'all start working together.
Absolutely. Okay. So she said, hey, when you finish this song, I'm Getting Ready, send it to me and I'm going to put 16 bars on it. And immediately I thought, she has got to be kidding me, right? And so I'm texting like, are you sure? And she was like, send it to me. I'm going to put 16 bars on it. And she said to me, this will be the first opportunity that I have to expose my relationship with God to my followers. And I want to do it on your album. She said that to me. See? So who am I to say, this person can't worship God?
There you go. You're starting too soon.
I'm trying to,
yeah, because now, see, you're making my tear ducts start acting up.
Yeah.
Because we have a bit, who am I to, like even what you just said, she says, I want to expose my relationship with God to my followers.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people, it don't look like how it quote unquote should look like as you know, and
how
I say,
we want it to look.
Yeah. How we want. And you don't understand someone's journey. And I always say, if you talk to Paul, you know, when he was Saul, you'd be like, oh, he's the devil. I don't want nothing to do with you. And he's a great person that God used in the Bible.
One encounter.
And we don't never think about what if we are that encounter.
That encounter. Yeah. Yeah, it was an immediate yes for me. Like everything in my spirit said yes.
What did the label say? The label say, did you have anybody with pushback? They was like, thank you, this is a gem.
But you know, after the release, of course, I mean, people, it was an uproar.
I remember.
Because it took us a while to release like the list of songs on it. And I think one night I was like, okay, this is a night, I told the label, we're going to do it. So we released all of the songs, which that album just, it broke so many records.
Yes.
It just took on a life of its own, you know, outside of the Nikki and I'm Getting Ready. It was just a great album. And when we put out I'm Getting Ready and it had Nicki Minaj on there. Oh my goodness. That next morning. Listen, social media was in an uproar. Y'all had yourselves in a jumble. You hear me? But you know what? I believe that I had equipped myself for it mentally.
So it didn't do nothing to you. It just.
No, I won't ever say it doesn't do anything. Right. You know, I think, and I can't speak for everybody, but for me, we are human.
Yeah.
And you can read 20,000 comments that's for you. That's
and
like,
you read two of them. You're like, oh God,
they don't like me. Oh Lord, you know, you need therapy. You know, so I believe I have placed myself in a mental space where I prepared for it. You know, you can brace yourself for something, but you still feel the blow. You know, that's how I was. But never once did I question whether it was the will of God. Not once.
So how did you combat it? What were some things that you said that, did you even make any statements publicly about it?
I did not. I may have did one.
I don't even think I did.
That was one of the things. I grew up Pentecostal holiness. You know, you used to have this statement, let the Lord fight your battles. I really felt like that was something that in my spirit, I felt like God would be the one to make the statement. You know, just like, you know, I think of the story with Mary and Martha, where Martha's like, hey, you need to work. She's sitting there. And Jesus is like, he spoke up for Mary. She didn't have to say anything. Martha was doing all this complaining, and Mary didn't have to say a thing. Jesus spoke up for her, and I felt like he was going to speak up for me. And right now, I could show you DMs of people who was like, in 2017, you know, I didn't understand what you were doing, and I apologize. I have so many messages of people who have seen how that song has impacted so many people's lives, you know, and so I feel like the Lord fought the battle. Yeah.
But in the midst of it, you get this big song. Mm-hmm. Has it been, of course, you got to say no names, but has it been other artists that have reached out to you that the Holy Spirit told you not to record a song with?
Absolutely.
So you ain't just saying yes before you say no. You ain't just saying yes to everything.
Right. There have been.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, it has to be aligned with what God has called you to do.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like you can't just jump out there and do everything. So I give God a yes.
Yeah.
Before I can think of a reason to say no, not everybody.
So how has your relationship journey been? You got married
7 years now.
7 years ago. Did you feel like you had been married sooner? Like, you know, a lot of women in their 20s, they'd be like, I'm going to be married by 25, you know, and then after 25, it's just progressively gets more discouraging. And when they hit 30, it's like, I'm not married yet. And so they start getting very discouraged. Was that your journey?
This might not be a popular answer, but it's my answer. I felt like I would be married, but the details were foggy. Like, I never could put my finger on when it would be, how it would be, or who it would be. I had one request of God, is that the person that I would marry would know me before the Tasha Cobbs that everybody else knew.
Mm-hmm. But you had that request before you ever knew you was going to be the Tasha Cobbs that everybody else would know?
Well, it had been prophesied to me for my entire life.
Okay.
You know, the word of prophecy that had come to me, it was my prayer that whatever God would do with my life, my husband would know the me that my family knows. That Tasha, little tot.
So what was prophesied to you early on?
Well, from my mom, there's one that stands out to me specifically that really came to pass. My mother was like an intense worshiper. So I say all the time, I grew up in a Pentecostal Holiness church. So we shouted and praise. But my mother was more like a crier. She would just be the one in the corner, hands lifted. And we were like, oh, that lady right there, she's so deep. But it worked in our family. My dad was a praiser. So he was like a preacher. He stood up in the pews, you know, all that. And I remember one day my mother was driving home. She used to work at Fort Stewart, Georgia. She worked on the label base for a while. And she came home. She sat in the garage for like 30 minutes, just out there worshiping and crying. And when she got out the car, she came inside and she said, the Lord spoke to me. And he said that people will know your name before they know your face. And when I go back to the video, this makes me tear up, of me winning the Grammy 7 days after my father went to be with the Lord. People did not know my face. When they said Tasha Cobbs, everybody was looking around like, who is that? You know, like, where is she? It was because we've heard this song, Break Every Chain. We've all been singing it in our churches, but we don't know what she looked like. And so when I got up, that was my mother's, the word she had given me coming to pass, that people will know they will know your face, your name, before they know your face. And so many prophecies have come to pass like that. Like, I see your name in lights, but a lot of people, and I love that God would keep me hidden behind him. Like, it's never been about,
you better quit playing. Don't you start preaching.
And I want to keep it, you know, keep it that way. It's not about me. It's always been about him in the forefront. Yep.
Your mama.
She's such prophesied. A sweet lady.
See, I thought you were about to say you was at some revival and some prophet came
in. Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah, and then prophesied that over you, but your mama.
Yes, that's different.
That's different. Because you came from her. Yep. And I believe that as parents, and now since you've been a parent you're going to experience all that, mm-hmm. is that where God, you experience a download on God where he begins to show you your child and the trajectory yes. of their life, you know, in the before place. So wow. you'll get a chance to see it and you'll be like, hmm. And then you'll mm-hmm. just watch it just play itself
develop,
out.
Yeah.
Because I used to say God was the biggest snitch on me. God used to tell,
truly.
God used to tell my mama all kind of stuff. I'd be like, what?
I mean,
I'd be doing something, I ain't got no business. My mama walking there, she said, what goes on in the dark comes to the light.
I'd come
be,
on.
What are you talking about?
Come on, mama.
And then she'd tell me what I was doing, and I'd be like, how she know this?
Yes.
And she said, baby, you don't know I pray?
Yeah.
I talk to God.
And he talked to me about you.
Man, right. let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe it. I didn't know until it just kept showing up. Mm-hmm. And so it taught me to have a heart posture behind my kids of
that.
Prayer. Yeah. So you never knew the time, the season, mm-hmm. or when you were going to get married, the age, who it was, what profession he was going to be yep. in. And you just said, for whatever reason, you said yeah. you wanted him to know the Tasha, the Tata, before that person, before the fame and everything else.
Yep.
Why
yep.
did you feel like that?
You know, I wanted to be sure that this is, you love me. You don't love everything else that's connected to the name,
yeah.
but you truly love me. And God answered that prayer.
How did you meet?
That prayer.
How did you meet?
How did we meet? I get to tell my story.
All by
Kenny
yourself. Kenny can't come and debate it. I'll give you an opportunity to come on the podcast and you can debate it later or whatever.
Right. Because there's some little nuances in there. So I met Kenny. I was going to a worship conference in Charlotte, North Carolina. Teresa Harrison used to have a worship conference called Gospel Heritage. So we were going to Gospel Heritage and I was there with William Murphy. He was singing that night. And so William Murphy was up teaching a class. His class went over time. I'm telling the truth right now.
Go ahead, tell the truth.
Went over time. He looks at me and he says, Todd, I need you to go do my rehearsal. So at the time I was serving as the worship pastor at the Dream Center in Atlanta under Bishop William Murphy. And so I went and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I already didn't want to be there. He woke us up 4 o'clock that morning. It's like we're going to Charlotte. I didn't want to be there. I was agitated. I was also in that season of depression that I told you about.
What year was this?
This was 2009. I had all of these walls up. You know, I was in an emotional space that was unhealthy already. And so I went in and I was like, oh Lord, y'all singing the wrong version of Praises What I Do. Who's in charge here? I'm like, now Kenny, his story is I slammed doors. There was no door. There was no door.
It was no door inside.
No. Kenny was like, what church don't have a door? So I walked in. I was like, who's in charge here? You're doing the wrong version of the song. So he stands up. Hi, my name is Kenneth Leonard. All calm. He was like, anything that you need, we'll make sure that we fix it. By the time it's time for you to minister tonight. So I was like, who is this guy? Because your energy need to meet my energy. You know, if I'm in an uproar.
He needs to be in an uproar. He needs to be up here.
Everybody needs to be frantic. And I've always said from that moment until this one, he's the calm to my storm. He is, it could be going crazy. He's always going to be settled. Always going to be calm. So I say, you know, y'all singing the wrong version of the song. He's like, well, okay, we'll fix it. He handed me his business card. And I was like, who is this guy? You know, in the band, everything. By the time we got there that night, everything was fixed. I mean, Bishop Murphy got up. People could not get off the floor and worship. It was just great. And after that, this was during MySpace time. So Kenny sent a MySpace message to me and he said, I just don't know why, but I feel like we need to stay connected. And literally for years, I got him dressed for dates. We were the best of friends.
Oh, so y'all became homies.
Homies. Like he knew the tot before people. As a matter of fact, when I released my album Smile, he was playing at a church and you know how churches play worship music before the service. The song came on and people started singing my song all over the church and he called me and said, do you know that these people singing your song everywhere? Like, how did they know you? I was thinking, he has no clue whatsoever.
For real, he just didn't know.
He
was that detached.
During that time, Kenny was touring with a lot of R&B artists. So he traveled with Anthony Hamilton, Tamia.
So he was detached.
He just had not been in and he has just not been in a worship setting yet to know that smile had been taken off. So it's the way that God worked it out, you know. And we've spent years where even with our friendship, after he got married, we just kind of lost touch for a while. And then after he went through a season of darkness and he got a divorce and depression, and then we could reconnect, he sent me a message one day, I need my friend. And then after that, it was like, okay, y'all have been crazy all this time not knowing that you love each other. Like, it was one of those stories, for real.
Did you love him?
I did.
Or did you just look at him as like, oh, just my homeboy?
I did. Both.
Was it any romantic feelings? Like, when you first met him, was there, you know how you feel that little tingle or that little spark mm-hmm. or whatever? It was just like, who is this guy?
Cool. This is the guy that fixed praises what I do, so I wouldn't get chewed out. I mean, cool. He would date these girls and I'd be like, she crazy. He was going to all these like meetings and stuff. Like, this is crazy.
So through that whole time, it still wasn't no romantic feeling. You wasn't like, man, she don't know how to appreciate him like I would.
Nope. That I don't know why. And I guess it took both of us experiencing more life before we realized that we had tools that each one of us needed for the other. Yeah. Yeah. It took time. So I will be an advocate for people who say don't rush things, because we needed that season of friendship for the strength that we have in our marriage right now. We needed that.
Listen, I need y'all to receive that right there.
Yes.
I always talk about that. I always talk about I want to go from friend to fiance. Mm-hmm. And what that means to me is that you have such a strong friendship. Because in the Bible, you didn't have all that stuff. You didn't have no girlfriend, no boyfriend. You didn't have none of that stuff. You know what I'm saying?
When you were engaged, you was married.
You was married. You know what I'm saying? It's like you had suitors. That's it. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, you hit the nail on the head, because when you have a foundation of friendship, ooh, when the mares get rocky, when you don't like each other, when you're annoyed, you can go back to that friendship.
Yes.
And every couple that I have that has built a solid friendship, that's been on this podcast, they'll say, I don't want to talk to my wife right now. I want to talk to my best friend.
Yep.
And when you said, when he called you up and said, I need my friend right ooh. Now. Ah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So during that phone call, when did it start turning? When did it turn from when y'all reconnected as friends, what made it start turning?
Because it was no longer surface. That it unlocked another space of transparency and depth with both of us. Because though he was sharing that he was in a dark place, I was too. You know, and the world didn't know that. They knew, hey, this is the girl that's on the stage and she's making us happy and she's making us smile. But I would go home for days and be in the dark, plagued by anxiety and fear. And so to have that one person who could also relate to, one person, not just a person, somebody I can trust, somebody that I knew that wasn't going to go out and expose y'all singing her songs, but she's dealing with, you know, I was safe. Both of us were safe. And that unlocked another space in our relationship.
Were you dating around that time?
I was not dating. I didn't have the capacity. I was just so, it was a really dark place.
Were you a dater at any point? Like, even when you met him, he got married during that season, were you dating? Were you almost close to marriage to nobody?
I was not. I was probably one of them people too consumed with life and work. And, you know, looking back, I went through therapy even for this, because I was also always a person who lived for what's next. So like, we'll talk about this in a few minutes. I'm in a new season now, but finished writing that book today, something happened. I wouldn't live to celebrate it. I would just be like, okay, now what's next? Did y'all send out an email? I lived in the future, but I had to learn how to live in the present and celebrate moments. And I think during that season, even with Kenny, I remember going through therapy. I want to share this. And the therapist told me to do something with my closest friends and my loved ones. She was like, I need you to make them make you be present. So like, to this day, if I'm living too far in the future, Kenny will make me sit down and say, how do you feel? Do you have a headache? You know, do your feet hurt? How do you feel? Like, they make me be present. Like, I loved, that was one of the things that really shifted my life and made me live in the present. I think too many times we live in a ambitious, go-getter kind of world where we don't stop to celebrate what God is doing right now.
Tasha, let me tell you something. You speaking. Last year, I was very intentional on doing that with myself because that was the thorn in my side for several years. When I was touring shows across the country, I don't have a lot of pictures from me touring my plays.
Wow,
I used to tour national plays across the country. And I don't be having no pictures to show for it. I don't
nothing
be having
to nothing. Show for it.
Because the promoters be like, we got to make sure next market, we got to make sure we grossing this and grossing that. And I was in this performance mentality. Ooh. And so it just kept me, I couldn't even celebrate. And I had the biggest migraines during that time. Oh, I would get off the stage, sit down in my hotel room. I wear suits and stuff. I started touring shows when I was 23 years old. Yeah. And I would sit down and I would fall asleep in about 5 seconds.
Oh my
and
goodness.
I'll wake up with alligator shoes on, full suit on, and I'm waking up just fully dressed. And I'm like,
exhausted.
That was horrible sleep. Mm-hmm. And that would happen so often. And so last year, I kept saying, I'm going to start celebrating milestones in my life. I hit a certain number on YouTube, I'll go buy me a little gift to take myself out to eat. If I get, you know, Tasha Cobb on the podcast, and I'm going to go celebrate that today. I'll be like, you know what? God, thank you for doing that. Because oftentimes we'll pray prayers and then we'll see it manifested and we
keep living through it.
Remember?
See, in the Bible, they would stop to build an altar.
You better talk about it.
Listen.
And so that's what I used to use, girl. You all in my business. That's what I would use to celebrate me. Yeah. I said, God, when God did stuff in the Bible, they would stop and build an altar in remembrance and say, mm-hmm. God, I remember this season in my life. Ooh. You did this for me, so I'm going to build something as a memorial to remind me of what you did. Wow. But now we'll just go from one moment to the next and be like, mm-hmm. Oh, hey, thank you. Next thing, performance based. Mm-hmm. And so that's your beautiful altar that's sitting on that table right there.
Yeah.
Of the manifestation of tears and as you bled on these pages, you know what I'm saying? And to remind yourself to be present and not go, all right, well, let's see. Yeah. I need to go do the next book. Girl, mm-hmm. the first book ain't came out yet. I need to start working on my next. Like, you just be present and celebrate that. So I thank you so much for actually sharing that.
Wow.
And now you've taught me to even be more intentional to tell my friends and family to remind me to be present.
Remind me to be present.
Remind me.
Yeah.
He said, do your feet hurt right now?
Yeah. Cause
talk about it, Tosh.
Because I got arthritis in my toes.
And he just said, do your feet hurt?
Do your feet hurt? That is, you know what? It's funny, but it is literally.
It's real.
It's real. Like, it makes you be present. It makes me stop to think, am I in pain? Because, you know, sometimes us workaholics and people
work straight through it.
And you won't even realize that you're in pain right now. Like, you're not feeling good.
You don't even remember. You don't even recognize that you're hungry. You haven't eaten all day. You just be working, singing. You be like, I haven't eaten nothing all day. You know, so you have to remind yourself of the simple things in life. And it sounds crazy, but it's something that we have to remind ourselves. Yeah.
And I really even feel like right now that it's a tool that the enemy uses to keep us from focusing on the greatness of God. Like, if you establish reminders and monuments and altars, you always have a place to go back to remind you just of how good he is. Sometimes we can get in seasons that are challenging, and because we don't have reminders, we never stop to build a monument or to build an altar. We don't have anything to come back to show you, no, he was good then and he's gonna be good again.
I think you just wrote your next song.
That's the next song.
Yeah.
Build an altar.
That right there, boy.
Yes.
It's something on that.
Wow.
It's something on that.
Y'all gotta do that.
Yeah.
You have to stop to recognize when God has done something in your life. And I think church culture will tell you, you ain't supposed to celebrate. But the Bible says something totally different. Wow. Woo. Couldn't nobody be Jesus telling you who he was. He said, I am the way. He would tell you, listen,
and
this is
who I am. And if you got it wrong, he'll say, but who do you say that I am?
Who do you say that I am? He was like, let me remind y'all real quick. And this, hey, I ain't bragging. I'm just telling the truth. It's who I am.
Let me ask you this. Did you have a problem celebrating yourself?
I did.
At what point did it finally click to say, I'm going to celebrate what God has done?
It was around that same time. Because I think you just carry so much weight of being great or being successful or completing the next task that you don't really stop to celebrate what God has done through you and how he will use you. You know, I think it is, how do I say this? It is a honor. It is an honor for God to choose to use your gifts, whatever they are.
Yes.
And I think it's a slap in the face when we say, I'm not going to celebrate what God gave me or how God chooses to use me. When God is like, I want you to praise me for this.
Do you remember what you did in celebration of yourself?
Ooh, for me, it's rest. vacationing. That's how I celebrate. Like, hey, all right, now you can take some time off. You can take some time away. And I wasn't always like that. Like right now, we actually put it on our calendars so that we, you don't, because you have a tendency to skip over it. 100%. Like, oh, those 3 days can wait. We can do it next month. And yep. Next month never comes. Yeah.
So you take vacations.
We do.
You go travel.
I have one plan right now.
When is it? When is it? Where y'all
when
going?
We come off this tour, I have a couple things happening right in the next couple weeks after that. And then we're going, we're going to take 4 days. Just 4 days to breathe.
Is it going
to
be out the country somewhere?
No, I'm going to stay in the country.
Is it hard for you to get out the country?
I'm not an out the country kind of person.
Why not?
Because I need to be able to get back to Asher. I need to get to Asher quick.
Yeah, get back to my baby.
My baby boy.
Is it hard for you to be away?
It is. It is. Right now, we've been on tour for 30 cities. And Asher's 2.5. So that's been tough because he started school while I was gone. I did get to take him on his first day, so that was great.
Good.
So it's just been kind of tough watching how he's grown so quickly, just being around other children, being in school, and I have to watch it on FaceTime. But somebody told me something that I'll never forget. It's a pastor. Her name is Fanika Friend. And she said to me, when God equipped you, he equipped them for the life that you were called to live. And so I always keep that at the forefront of my mind.
So you won't be so guilty of the
mom guilt, yes.
Yeah.
That he's equipped for this.
All right. We're going to keep it out because, you know, you start talking about the kids, we can talk about that. I'm going to come back to that. We're going to unpack. We're going to build to that. Mm-hmm. So when did it happen to where the romance came into y'all friendship?
I love this because this is about to be so Tasha. One night, I just told him, I said, you got feelings for me. You have feelings for me. Now, how were bold you, is that? Why can't I just say I got feelings for you?
Because you had to project it. And that was good that you did it like that.
I sure did.
Because it wasn't like you were pursuing him. You made him confess his
own. That he wanted to pursue me. Right? I helped him out.
You
I gave him some help.
You gave him an alley-oop. And you said, you told him he
you had feelings. You got feelings for me.
And what did he say?
He could not disagree. I said, I think we need to discuss this. We're going to have to talk about this. It was the truth. Look at us now. Come on, 7 years down the road. Ladies, that's a little tip.
Yeah, tell them.
You're not being too aggressive. You're just like helping. Helping. We called to be helped. We called to help, right?
Yeah, y'all supposed to be the helpmate.
Yeah.
And so you told him how he felt about you.
Yes.
and he said.
He couldn't disagree.
And he just said what?
We actually just discussed it over the next couple of days. It was a few days. Because he had to think about that thing. It was, you know, that is something like that to catch you off guard. I'm that kind of person. If I muster up the boldness and the strength, I'm gonna say it. It's just you just do it. Sometimes you just gotta do it anyway.
How long did y'all date before the proposal?
It was years.
Years?
Yeah. So about 2 years. Because Kenny actually he was married before.
Right.
So he has two children from that marriage.
Right.
And we wanted to make sure that the timing was right for the children.
Right. Of course.
You always have to, blending families is important. And it's important that you put the children at the forefront of it.
So you were aware of that even going in.
Mm-hmm. And even with Shia, our baby's mom, she's my friend Shia. We're so cool. With her, she allowed me, so Symphony is a baby girl. So Symphony was 3 years old at the time. And so she allowed me to spend time with Symphony first. So I started with the baby. And
who then, did? The ex-wife did? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So we, from the beginning, we had a very, we had great communication.
So, how'd that work out? How did that first introduction to his ex-wife work out? Like, she's like, because that sounds very healthy.
Oh, no. It sounds very healthy.
Sounds very healthy.
You know what? We had some unhealthy seasons and we had some very hard conversations.
Right.
But at the end of the day, all of us committed to making sure that our kids had the best parental experience.
Yes.
And I think having a bonus mom, we teach them that, like, y'all just got extra, you know? And so it wasn't always that way, but I will never forget this. There was a podcast with Will Smith, Jada Pinkett, and Will Smith's oldest son's mom. They did an interview together. And in the interview, the mother was talking about how Jada loved her son so much that it made her love Jada. And our baby's mom, she sent me that that interview, and she said, "This is how I feel." She was like, I've not been able to articulate it until I saw this.
You broke down crying.
She said, all of us, both of us was just a mess. She said, the way that you love my children makes me want to love you. And from that, from that conversation until now, we worked tirelessly to make sure that our relationship is as healthy as it can be so that our kids have the best parental experience ever.
Do you realize what y'all did for those kids? See, they don't have they're not going to grow up with the testimony of, my mama don't like my dad and new wife and they this. I got to walk on eggshells. I got to pretend like I really don't like my bonus mom because my mom is jealous of that. So I got to act like I don't like her when I'm around her. And then I got to act like, and they just learn
so
how to act.
So many different dynamics.
Yeah, all that crazy stuff. They can just be healthy.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was so self-aware enough to know that she could see that you don't have any ill intentions and that you truly love her kids so much that she says, I can't help but love you because I see how much you love my kids. That is beautiful. Yep. When I say I want that to resonate with everybody that's watching this episode, those that have families that didn't go ideal, the traditional nucleus family or whatever, where you have the I hate to say baby mama, baby daddy situation, but y'all not living in the same household with your kids or whatnot, that you can still have a healthy parental dynamic if you work with
it. It requires a lot of selflessness.
A lot.
Yep.
A lot.
And I want to say this. From the beginning, it wasn't always that way. But I have to give all of us, we give kudos to Kenny. The way that he managed all of us so well. Like, he would lean in where he felt more of his energy needed to be. And then he would pull away when he felt like, okay, they have to experience this on their own. He would allow us to have our conversations. When he needed to interject, he would interject. Even with the kids, the way that he would sit down with each one of them. Because he tells it this way, that he's also a bonus father. So he went through that. So with his first marriage, our middle son, our oldest son, is from his first marriage. So that's his bonus son. But they're all our children. And so he from experience, he says, so I've been on both sides of this and I understand what it takes to manage both dynamics. And so he did so well in allowing us to have our space, but also interjecting wisdom when it needed to be there.
Kenny, let me tell you something.
He's the guy.
I salute you, King. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's the epitome when the Bible says you are the priest of your home.
Yes.
That's what he did. Mm-hmm. That's what he cultivated. That's what he curated.
Yeah.
And it's like, we can go on and on about that because I believe that as men, as leaders, that's how we model leadership that. If you can set the tone in your household to be like, hold on, we're not going to be doing this.
Yep.
We're not going to be doing this. This is what we're going to do together. Then women, they will acquiesce to that, to that masculine energy.
Yep. And let me tell you, that's what he did. Because there would be times where each one of us, we want to say something. You want to get back. You want to get back. And he would be like, that's not how we handled it. How is that? He would use words like, how is that going to help us to progress? If you say that way, you're saying that from emotion, not in a way that's wise enough to help us build our family dynamic. I mean, literally, he talks like that.
Kenny, I'm going to tell you this right quick. You ask God if this agrees with you, but you need to be writing a book about that. You need to write a book about co-parenting. And that would be absolutely powerful because I believe that, especially our culture as African-Americans, you would be doing a great service to us to learn that because that would be a generational shift because that's what's happening in our culture is that we have all this nonsense. You see it on social media all the time. It's crazy. You'll see, prime example, even when it comes to Sierra and Russell, you'll hear them try to you'll hear people on social media be throwing, who's a baby daddy? What's the man's name?
Future,
you know, all that. Why can't it just be healthy? Why can't it be
healthy?
Russell says, listen, I am going to parent your son like it's my own.
Yeah.
You know, why can't it be that and it be okay and not become toxic with all this type of stuff?
We live in a culture where people just love toxic. They love, we have to make everything toxic. Why can't everything just, some things are just, it's good.
It's good. It didn't work out in this situation, but it's working out in this situation. Yep.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah. It's not the how y'all plan it to be, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's work. Yeah. It's working out. All yeah. things work together for the good yes. that love God to the called according to his purpose. Why can't it be
I
that?
Love it.
So I love that Kenny was very instrumental in doing that to mm-hmm. make sure that y'all level set and he yeah. cast vision.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about being a leader is casting vision over your household where you say, hey, listen, this is counterproductive to yeah. to the end result.
It is.
And that's
yeah.
I get
yeah.
excited about that stuff. And so y'all dated for 2 years mm-hmm. before the famous question, will you marry me? How'd that happen?
It was private. And our wedding was actually private too. I can't wait to get there. So we were actually watching a movie, just sitting at the house, watching a movie. And he gets up off the sofa and I'm like, what is really happening? Because you're not, I told you I didn't have any
idea of
expectations whatsoever, which I think was probably great for him.
Yeah.
You know, and he just shared his heart with me that, you know, there's nobody else for me. I choose you for the rest of my life. You know, y'all know, you know, the little spiels y'all
yeah,
do.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And he asked me, would I marry him? Yep. It was just me and him.
And what did you say?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
You have to think
yes.
about it. You have to say, I'll give
it. Listen, I gave him a yes before I
gave him a yes before I found any logical reason to say no.
Yep. And we prepared a wedding. One of the things that we both wanted, because we lived such a life that was in front of the people, we wanted it to be private. And so we sent out dinner invitations for a New Year's dinner to all of our close friends and family that Kenny and Tasha want you to join them for a dinner. They did not know. I'm talking to me. The only people that knew were our parents and team members. So when people showed up to this venue, I wanted them when they pulled up, the first thing I wanted them to see was a wedding cake. So they thought they were coming to eat. And literally when you drive up, there's valet and a wedding cake in the window. And they're wow. like, no, they didn't.
Wow.
All of my aunts, we call them the Golden Girls, my mom's sisters. They're like, no, look what I got on. What? Yeah. Why you didn't tell me it was a wedding? You know? But that's how we wanted it.
That's
we wanted
good.
It to be the people that we knew would celebrate and pray for us, not just for this one event, but for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
And so we had friends that were there who stood with us. They made a commitment to challenge us in seasons and to make sure that we were faithful to this marriage. It was exactly what we wanted. Exactly. So we had about 100 people in the room. Yeah, it was beautiful.
And who was the officiant?
Bishop Brian Pierce, that's Kenny's spiritual father, from Mount Zion in Greensboro, North Carolina. Used to yeah. sing with Men of Standard.
Yes.
Brian Pierce, that's our spiritual father.
Men of yep. Standard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm singing. Boy, they say they some singing folks.
Wasn't they
Lord.
Tough?
Jesus.
Goodness. Isaac Green.
Oh, God.
No. My goodness.
Shout out to Isaac. I was yeah. just with him a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta.
Yes.
But yeah, man. That's
love,
yeah.
Ike.
Man, so private ceremony. Y'all mm-hmm. were both in alignment with that.
Yes.
Y'all both wanted the same thing. Mm-hmm. So y'all take it that you're not a big showy type of woman no. where you needed all the, where'd that come
the
from?
Fanfare.
Yeah. I mean, did you have any, you know, family members? I know you say your aunts, the Golden Girls made some comments, but did anybody feel like, well, I wish
slide
you would yeah, slide it from it. Did they?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I think it was their expectation just knowing me.
Yeah.
You know, me and my mom, we laugh about it all the time. She can't think of one time that me and her ever sat down and did a collage of what Tasha's wedding gonna look like. It just, you know what? I never really thought of it this deep until this conversation. I knew I was gonna get married. Didn't know why, how, didn't expect, you know, I might not be the right person for this podcast.
No, you're the perfect person. You're the perfect person.
There are some people like that.
Because
yeah.
That's because sometimes people, they idolize marriage, but they don't put enough emphasis on they idolize the wedding, but they don't put enough emphasis on the marriage.
Yes.
And so I don't see anything wrong with that.
Nothing.
My daughter was the same way.
Really?
So my daughter got married a year and 3 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And I made up in my mind how her wedding going to be.
You fixed it up.
Man, I picked the venue. I did all this stuff. I said, we're going to do this. And then one day she stopped. She said, Daddy, that's not what
I want.
I said, what you mean? That's not what we want.
Yes.
She yep. said, Well, me and my fiance, Tay, we want something simple.
Yes.
You're going to have all these people, your friends there. We don't know them people. You know, she said, I just want about 20 people, people I know.
You ain't even made it a production.
I said, yeah, I said, your daddy is a producer. What are you? I felt slighted. I already had planned our first dance.
You're like, don't do this to me.
Don't do this to me. I'm getting married. What is wrong with you? Why can't you do this? She was like, I don't need all that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. My daughter got married.
So
I booked the venue originally, and she told me not to do it. She said, listen, I don't want that. That's too big.
Yeah.
So I gifted on the first year of my podcast in 2020. I did it's called Black Love Matters, where I sponsored three couples getting married. So I used that venue to say, I can't let it go to waste. So me and my team, we got together and we sponsored three couples to have a group wedding. But that's because my daughter didn't want to do the wedding there. So then I had to gift it with other people. So I was like, this is some nonsense. So she was going to do a destination wedding. Later on, she ended up getting married in the clubhouse of her apartment.
Wow.
That was it. It was a clubhouse.
See, I love stuff
Order
like
some,
this.
Ordered some Olive Garden. Her mama paid for the
Olive Garden.
It was just real simple.
It.
I said, this is so simple.
Yeah.
And she was like, but I still cried the same.
Yep.
When I was standing there about to give away, I still cried the same.
Come on.
I looked in the eyes and I was like, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it was what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it was just beautiful. So I love the fact that, you know, it ain't like you couldn't afford it.
It wasn't about,
like, I don't need all that. This is going to be what we wanted.
Yeah.
And the fact that y'all were aligned in that.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. And the fact that you said, no, I didn't have, thank you, Holy Spirit. You didn't have it all picked out about what he was going to look like, what he's going to be, what age is going to be. You literally surrendered to the Holy Spirit guiding you whenever that date was going to come, whoever it was going to be, however, whatever his profession is going to be. You just said, I'm surrendered.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's the most powerful thing that I want people to take away from it, because people get into depression because they didn't get married the time that they wanted.
Yes.
It was like, I was supposed to be married by now. Were you really?
Wow.
Were you really supposed to be married by now? Mm-hmm. If you said that God will order your steps and that step hadn't been ordered yet, so was you really supposed to be married by now?
Yeah. Yeah. I was 36.
36.
Yeah. And I mean, to a lot of people, that's late. It's a lot of people at 30, they start cringing. Like, oh my goodness. You know, and I would just encourage a lot of women to submerge yourself, number one, into your relationship with Christ. And I know we don't want to hear that. You think it's so deep, it's so churchy, but you would be surprised how fulfilling that is. And it's not so much about staying the Bible, submerging yourself in your relationship with Christ can be, hey, take yourself out, hang out with your girls, you know, find yourself, make yourself a wife.
There it is.
Make yourself a wife. And I don't mean the cooking and cleaning. I mean, be whole.
There it is.
Be happy with yourself.
There it is.
Like the way that you look. You know, take care of yourself. Find yourself engulfed into your career and into your ministries, whatever you're called to do. Like, there are so many other things to do than to sit around and allow the enemy to make you get depressed. Because so many people get into a place of depression because we get in our heads.
Yep.
Yeah.
You just preached. Let me ask you this real quick. Because you talked about a real thing. You get 36 years old. Mm-hmm. At 35, doctors telling you you're going to have a geriatric pregnancy.
Yep.
And so it becomes real with women who desire kids, that doctors or gynecologists are telling them, what we doing?
Yeah. Yep.
How did you deal with that in your pregnancy? I mean, in your marriage?
You know what? I think I've always felt that there was something that I needed to have some doctors to pay attention to. And I didn't really put a lot of attention to it until after we got married. So for 2 years, you know, we tried to have a baby and I was like, okay, this is not working. I feel, you know, you feel this emptiness. You feel like there's something going on. So I went to a doctor in Houston and we found out that I had a severe case of endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
And so the endometriosis was preventing us from conceiving. So we decided, hey, well, let's do whatever it takes to fix it, because you got all these prophecies, you know, everybody's saying y'all gonna have this baby. And we believed it, you know. And so we went to Houston. We would fly to Houston once a month for a year. To, you know, just do the math, y'all. Once a month for a year, we would get these injections to clear endometriosis out of my body. And when it was clear enough, we felt like the doctors would say, y'all have a window, just a window of opportunity, just a few months where you can do IVF and have an embryo implanted. So we went through with IVF. we had one embryo, you know, one embryo, and we implanted the embryo and we lost that baby. And so can you imagine? I'm thinking, okay, we have a promise from God. Mm. I don't have enough eggs to do this again. We lost the one embryo that we have. So where is this miracle coming from? You know, and I feel like there are so many people, and I feel like so many people can relate to this story, because whether it's a natural child or a spiritual something that God has called you to birth, some of us feel like we're in a place where we just don't understand. Like, why is this not happening how God said it would happen? And I, and my story now, I couldn't have told this that way back then because I was so grieved and depressed and hurt and confused. But now that I've allowed God to give me revelation behind it, it was God saying, babe, I told you you were going to have a baby, but you tried to go do it your way. You know, and I've shared this several times. Sometimes we hear God's will, but we go and try to do it our way. And so our way was, you go get IVF, you go clear out endometriosis. And God is saying, but I've already created this human being, this beautiful baby boy that I have designed just for y'all, but you got to do it my way. And so one day Kenny came to me and he said, this was months after we lost the baby. And he said, babe, what do you think about adoption? And before, I probably would have been totally against it. But this time I heard Kenny sharing the word of God to his wife, that this is God's will and his way. And so we went through adoption. And the long story short is, we had an agent who, after we finished all the paperwork, I tell people all the time, I didn't go through labor like every other woman goes through labor, but I went through labor. Like, the processes that you have to go through in order to get to the adoption.
Yes.
It's just, you know, that mental, sometimes just thinking, is this going to fall through?
Yep.
You know, when I get a parent, is she going to change her mind?
Yep.
You have to think of all of those things. And so it's labor. And so we went through those months of labor, turned in our paperwork, and we submitted it to four adoption agencies. And she said to us, she said, you know, sometimes this could take 2 years, 4 years, and sometimes people never get a baby. And she said, but we're going to believe God that you've done all that you're supposed to do, and now God is going to do his part. 3 days later, 3 days later, we received a phone call from our agent saying, I don't know how this happened. She said, it's not even an agency that you submitted an application to. We don't know how they got your name.
What?
But a mother walked into this agency, and everything about your profile fits what she's asking for this baby.
Come on.
She said, it's between you and seven other families. And she said it could take about 2 weeks for her to make her decision. And she said, it'd take about 2 weeks for her to make her decision. She said, but I really, really sense in my spirit. This is why it's so good to have people who can hear from God for you in seasons where you can't hear as clear. Because we got to be honest, there are some seasons where we don't hear as clear. And just to have her there helping to usher us so gently through this season, especially after experiencing the trauma that we experienced.
Yes.
To have that person there who cared, who understood, but also who knew God. And she said, she didn't say this to me. She said, Kenny, I want you to sit and write a handwritten letter to the birth mother. And I want you to share with her how this family would be the perfect place for this baby boy, to Kenny. And so my husband went upstairs to the office and he wrote out this letter telling our story about our family, about our other children, and how they were excited to welcome another sibling. And the next day, she called us in tears saying, this has never happened in 20 years of me working at this agency. She said, the mother called and she chose you guys, and your baby boy is being born in 4 weeks. So this whole time we had been in labor, we had been carrying this baby. It just wasn't the way that we thought. It was God's way. Got my baby boy.
What was the time span between the loss of the embryo and the phone call that you had? How long was that?
You know, I don't know the exact time, but I would say it was between 7 to 9 months.
That's why I felt in the spirit.
Yep.
That's why I asked you that.
I need to get that exact number, but I really believe it was between 7 to 9 months.
That's why.
Because the process takes 6 months just to get all the paperwork and everything done. So when you add it up, that's
why I just heard in the spirit. And it just shows me how awesome God is, how intentional God is. The Bible says, if you know how to give good gifts as pretty much humans, what more do you think your Heavenly Father can do for you? How much more? And so when I listen to that, especially me being an adoption and foster care advocate, I actually sit on the board for an adoption agency. Shout out to Advantage Adoption.
Yeah.
But yeah, these stories right here, they hit me differently.
Jesus.
Because people have no idea about how intentional God is. Yeah. Because God knows that you and Kenny have exactly what that child needs. And when a mother decides to give up her child, and it's not really giving up in that sense. It's like the story of Moses. It's like saying, listen, I believe that it is my assignment.
Yes.
My assignment, because she has just been led by God, because you are praying a prayer and she is praying a prayer simultaneously because she knows what she, the resources or whatever she has that is causing her to give up the child. You're praying a prayer because you're saying, God, this is what we need in our life. And it's a prophecy that went for way before this moment.
Yeah.
And these prayers are happening simultaneously, and it takes two people to be obedient to the voice of God in order for this miracle to take place. When I tell you, the hand of God, the hand of God, and I'm telling you, and I like what you said, that no, we didn't go through a physical child
labor
or whatever, but oh, we went through some
it labor.
Because people don't know what you got to go through with all that. Man, they start doing, they come and investigate and do background
so
checks and do this stuff and do home studies and all this other stuff. And you sit around and be like, God, no. Yeah. Like, Lord Jesus.
Yep.
It's so easy. It's so much easier just to go take some sperm and an egg and have your own kid than to literally be going back like, God, no, what do you think I'm doing?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they will, you be like, y'all just went doing a whole background check and
everything for on everybody.
On everybody in the household. You'd be like, good Lord.
Truly.
Which is so necessary.
It is so necessary, yeah.
But the fact that you had to go through that.
Yep.
And that's the beautiful thing about what you'll be able to tell your child is, I chose you.
I tell them every day. Yes. Mommy and daddy choose you every day. Yep.
3 years old.
Yeah.
Had them since birth.
Yep. Day one.
How do you feel being a mother?
Oh my goodness. It's the most beautiful assignment. It is the most beautiful assignment for God to entrust you with a gift. Like, it's his gift. And God is saying, okay, I put all of these things inside this little tiny person that's going to grow up to be a big person, but it's your job to cultivate it.
What God moments do you see in him?
Oh, so many. Asher shows us so much about ourselves. For one, you know, Tasha, lighten up. Just lighten up. It is not that serious, you know? And he is that. He's like such a comedian. He's so wise to be 2.5. Like the other day, I was doing, I'll tell this one. I was getting my nails done, and the nail tech has known him since he was born, basically. And he's just now developing all of this language, sentences, all of this kind of stuff. And so she sees it every time she comes, and it's just he's getting better and better at it. So Asher was standing there, and he was just talking to me, just talking. And she was amazed. Like, when did he start talking like this? So he stood there, and he just smirked at her. And then he said, I can talk. He's like such this, like, that, and then it's just, it might be minor to some people, but to me, it just teaches me, Tasha, enjoy life, lighten up, you know, that's what Asher teaches us.
He told I can talk.
He said, I can talk. after he laughed at her for being amazed. Then he said, I can talk. Like, this little boy, his name is Asher, and it means laughter. So every morning he wakes up with this big smile on. He lives up to his name. Yeah. Asher Amaris. Me and Kenny both. So we chose Asher, which means laughter. And then his middle name, a gift from God.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is his mom present? I mean, his biological mom, is she still present?
She's not. She's not. But you know what? We had a great conversation. We actually had an opportunity to talk to her twice. And I didn't say that. In that conversation, when she chose us, Kenny asked her, what was the thing that made her choose us? And her response was, when I read your letter, the baby started kicking. And so she said, I didn't choose you. He did. Yeah.
Joshua,
yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yep. So in those good two Lord. Conversations, Jesus. That was one of the conversations we had with her. Yep.
She said, I didn't choose you, the baby
did. He
did.
Mm-hmm.
Do you the people don't believe in God. Let me tell you something. You,
listen, you gotta missing
be hard,
out.
You got to be hard pressed to try to, go ahead and make sense out of that. Go yeah. and say, oh, it's just a coincidence if you want to.
You try to figure it out. Like, only God. Only there's some things that the answer to that is only God.
Only God.
Yep.
Only God. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And so for those that are even considering adoption or foster care or whatnot, or they just, you know, they may feel like, well, that's still not going to feel like that's my child. Mm-hmm. I want you to speak to that. I want you to speak. Oh. Turn that camera and say, I want you to eradicate that. That thought.
I feel like the fear of the unknown is what causes a lot of people in our culture to not pursue it. But let me just, I'll be a testimony.
Yeah.
I could not love my baby anymore had I birthed him naturally. He looks like me. He walk like us, act like us, talk like us. When you do it God's way and you really sense that this is the way that God wants you to do it, I promise you that the gift that he gives to you, you are going to love it like it came from your loins. I promise you that. Yep.
So you got this amazing book that you've written.
Yeah.
What's the name of this book?
Do It Anyway.
Why did you name it that?
Ooh, I'm going to tell this really quick. In 2013, I released the album Grace. That album was nominated for 6 Stellar Awards and 1 Grammy, all within a span of 7 days. And my father was a down-home country preacher. He pastored a church. He started when I was 10 years old. This is the kind of family we were. We went on vacation from Sunday evening to Saturday so we could be back on the church on Sunday. My daddy was going to be the last one in the church. He was going to turn off the air and the lights because that bill wasn't going to be high. He was a down-home country preacher. But the Stellars were happening on a Sunday. And I was trying to condition myself that daddy's not going to be at the Stellars, but my daddy showed up to the Stellars. He came and I tell people now that was more of an award, a reward than anything I could have got that night to look out and see my parents in the room. And so daddy was there. I won 6 Stellars that night. That night he came to, we were in Bishop Murphy's room just laughing in the kiki-ki, and I couldn't believe he was in Nashville, and I really didn't feel like he was going to come at 2:00 in the morning to come laugh with us. He had us up all night laughing and joking around. And then he left at about 4:00 in the morning, and my father was a carpenter like Jesus. So he had built this curio to put all his baby girls awards in that he believed I was going to win. And so my repayment to him for being executive producer on my first album was, you get the awards, I'm never going to pay you back. I'm never going to pay. And so 4:00 that morning, my dad left the hotel room just laughing and playing with us. And I saw him beaming with pride. He was holding all of my awards in his hands. And I said, take one of them out, daddy. I'm going to snap a picture with you. And he took it out and he was smiling from ear to ear. And he held it up. I snapped a picture of him. And that was my last time seeing him. He went home to be with the Lord the next day. And I'll tell you this. During that week, he would say to me, daddy's not going to be with you in LA, but I want you to go anyway. And so I was thinking, nobody expects you to come to L.A. You go to Nashville, that's enough. And he just kept saying, daddy's not going to be with you.
Because L.A. was for the Grammys.
Yeah, I want you to go anyway. And that was the last lesson my father left with me. That sometimes your heart is going to be broken. Sometimes you're not going to understand it and you're going to be confused. But I want you to dig deep in yourself and get up and do it anyway. So the premise for this book, it came from the last lesson that my dad left with me. I know your heart is broken, but daddy wants you to go to LA anyway. And I won a Grammy that year. And that was the same year where nobody knew what I looked like, but they knew my name and they knew that song, Break Every Chain. It's the same year that my mother's prophecy came to pass.
That's the most beautiful story I heard in my life. Good Lord, Jesus.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well, I know we just toe up in here.
God, that's so beautiful.
So that's where we got the book from. And so it's just full of so many stories where I faced challenges in life. Stories that I can't tell in a song. I had to write these. I had to write it out. Yep.
Yeah, mess me up. That story is beautiful. So you got a picture of your dad. It's like, but think about
it's in the book. Can I show
you? Yes, please.
Yeah, they put that picture in the book.
Because think about that. Think about if you didn't have the wherewithal to take that picture.
I wouldn't have gone to the Grammys either. The only reason I went, I never thought I would win. The only reason I went, and I went upset with him because I was like, why did you keep telling me to go anyway? Go anyway. And I got there and people called my name. I couldn't believe it. That's the picture of him holding
the staff. Wow. Mm-hmm. The last picture.
Yep. I snapped it before he left and he had a heart attack and went to be with the Lord the next day.
The next day.
Mm-hmm. And that's the Grammy. I asked everybody in the Grammys to stand up and give my father a round of applause. And they did. I said, 7 days ago, the greatest man to walk the face of the earth went to be with the Lord.
7 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel being up there? Where did you feel? I mean, because I know he spoke that word over mm-hmm. your life, but I know it was heaviness. Could you actually enjoy that moment? A woman that had a whole, it was a challenge celebrating moments, even with less obstacles in a way. Did you celebrate that moment?
I did not.
It was just a blur, huh?
I was still living in the future, one of those moments. I felt the weight of the moment and I felt God's strength to be able to stand there and talk about my father and to receive that award.
Yeah.
But I wasn't as present as I could have been. And the way, you know what, God orchestrated it so well for me because like a couple of weeks before that, my father met Ty Tribbett at a conference and him and Ty just kicked it off. He came back home saying, Ty Tribbett, my best friend. My dad was so funny. He's my best friend. I told Ty, what did you do to my dad? And literally Ty was the one who gave, he was standing on stage with me and handed me my Grammy. He announced it.
So I
was surrounded by safety. Just little glimpses of daddy saying, I'm still here with you. You know, you're safe. You can do this. Ty was standing right there on the stage with me.
See what I'm saying?
And we walked off together and Ty just grabbed me. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it. Oh, we got two words. Only God. Only God.
Tasha, my community, we call them the Lit Fam because mm-hmm. on the podcast, we live intentionally and transparently. Mm-hmm. And so when we get people that, and that's the reason why when people come on my podcast, I don't try to like promote the book mm-hmm. or promote their product. Like buy this. Yeah. They get your story, fall in love with you, and then support you with everything you got. They finna start buying a bunch of your songs. People don't even know. We just got to support her. They just go crazy and support like crazy, which I thank y'all so much being like that. Yeah. People come on my podcast. They go, what do you have over there? They say, I've never even experienced this before. It's something different. They say, I've been on platforms all the time. I've been on TV. I never get this level of influx. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's just something that God trusted me with in order to foster and cure. Mm-hmm. And I thank God for it. But when I tell you, we speak a New York Times bestseller on this thing.
When I tell you, we speak
New York Times bestseller over this thing.
Wow.
The story, the heartbeat around this book.
Wow.
I don't even need to go into. I know the talking points. The publisher company sent me all that type of stuff. The book is going to be amazing just because it's coming from you. But just the fact, the heartbeat and the posture of it came from that. Oh God, that messed me up. That absolutely messed me up. And I love that it has photos in there. So it has photos of different moments.
Yeah, different moments that are in the book. So Asher's in there. Our kids are in there. My mother's in there. I tell some stories from when I was younger growing up in church. So it has some pictures of little Tata. Yeah, my brother. It has just pictures of that album Grace that won the Grammy. And then I did like discussion questions in the back too, because I know people have like small groups and I'm just that kind of person.
Yeah.
Some self-help kind of stuff.
Yeah. You
know? So it's literally the story of my life.
Let me ask you this, because you just got this book placed in your hand. That was earlier today. So how do you feel? How you feel when they place this hard copy in your hand?
You know, anybody that's ever carried an assignment, it's like you can breathe.
Yeah.
Like it's something, you hold on to this one breath of oh, is this going to happen? Or is there going to be a mistake? Is it going to come out right? Is the print, you know, you're just making up stuff. Is the print company going to explode?
We were thinking about every worst thing that could happen.
Every worst thing that could happen. But when they put it in my hands,
it became real.
It became real. And it's more the story I just shared. Like, I literally get to put my dad's lesson in so many other people's hands. Like, that's where, and I thought about that, and I looked at a picture of him in there, and y'all, they had me crying in there with all them people in there. I just, now he got me in here crying. I just, oh, when you hit 40, something else happened. I'm 42, and now I'm just a whale.
I'm 46. I turned 46 a couple weeks ago.
Start crying for no reason?
Because you grown. You say, you know, this is my feelings. Ain't nobody going to make me feel different. Mm-hmm. This is how I feel. And so you just own it.
And you have a different appreciation.
100%. Because you can look back and remember all that God has brought you through.
Yeah.
And when you look back, and them old folks used to always say it all the time. It's like, you'll understand it better. Bye. You're like, what is bye and bye?
We there now. We in one of the byes.
And we understand it better. You know, when you're looking back at all this stuff or whatever, or they'll say their famous thing, you can be falling apart about something that happened. They go, just keep on living.
You didn't want to hear it then, but it makes so much sense now.
I'm frustrated about this right now. Yes. Just keep on living. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that when you get to these parts of 30 and 40, and you dealt with heartbreak, and you deal with disappointments, you deal with things that don't work back, you look back and be like, God, if you did it before, you'll do it again.
Come on, that's the monument. That's them altars. You got to look back. Yeah.
Look back. And so, man, listen, as we conclude and wrap up, Tasha, let me tell you something. Thank you so much. You've given me a deeper appreciation of just time and an appreciation of taking time. I remember last year I said, it's an old saying. They said, take time to smell the roses. Mm-hmm. And so I said that, you know, last year I just stopped and just took time to smell the roses.
I
went to the Bahamas the last year and I was working so much that I don't even remember being in the Bahamas. Like I didn't get a chance to chill or do anything. Mm. And so they're booking me to come to the Bahamas, this month, well, May, Mother's Day weekend. And they were trying to put a lot of stuff on my schedule. I'm supposed to make an appearance out there. And I said, I don't want to do nothing. Don't put nothing on my schedule. I want to enjoy it. This is a beautiful country. Yes. Let me just enjoy it. 242 to the world. Let me just hang out and just enjoy it. And so that's what I'm going to do. And so I'm being more intentional of sitting down and just smelling the roses.
I love it.
But man, that book is going to be amazing. Make sure that y'all purchase this book, Blow Tasha's Mind. It releases May the 7th. Blow Her Mind. Do they have pre-orders going on?
They do. Yeah, all right, absolutely.
Cool.
Everywhere.
So that's good. Then I'm going to actually release this episode earlier so that we can get those pre-orders looking amazing on Amazon or whatnot. But
thank you for this.
Yeah.
It's gonna be amazing. I have been so blessed today. For real.
When I tell you, got me fooled right now. Like I'm gonna cry when I get in the car because this it just messed me up. Mm-hmm. Listen, you have a concert you got going on, huh? You're on tour. So let's talk about the tour.
One Hallelujah Tour. Erica Campbell, Jonathan McReynolds, Israel Houghton, Jacqueline Carr. I mean, it is explosive every night. Every night.
You got all my people on that tour.
All my people.
Erica was on my podcast before. Jonathan, he's still scared to get on the podcast. He said, I may one day. I'm scared. Jacqueline, she's supposed to come.
Jonathan get up every night. The women in the room. I said, all of them think he their husband. Y'all calm down out there.
Calm down out there. Yes. You know, Jacqueline, I did her radio show and whatnot. Yes. She's been wanting to come on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I said, let's make time for that.
Yeah.
But And then I'm getting Israel and his wife on the podcast soon. So
I love
it. It's going to be dope. You're going to be at the Stellars this year?
Yes, we'll be at the Stellars. You coming?
Yeah, I'm going to do they're talking. I'm going to do a live podcast recording like I did last year.
I love it.
Yeah.
The live ones be lit. Man. You say lit.
It was fun. It was fun, man. But thank you. Thank you for your support, man. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for success. I know you got to get running because I see your boy over there looking at his watch. And so he like, we got to go. Y'all can keep talking. Y'all can call each other on the phone. But listen, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing, Tasha. Hey, y'all give it up for my homie, Tasha Cobbs Lennon.
I love y'all. Yeah.
Thank y'all.
Stay tuned to the end for a letter to my future wifey.
Been writing these love letters to you.
Ledarian, thrusted suddenly into Child Protective Services in 2015. My nephew, black, a boy. The likelihood of being adopted outside of kinship, slim to none. Armani, 16 years old, black, a boy, with 5 years in the foster care system before I even knew his name. the likelihood of ever being adopted? Yep, you guessed it. Slim to none. While LaDarian and Armani were trying to survive and barely thrive in an overpopulated and underfunded foster care system, I was living my own life, doing well professionally. Having been a single father with a daughter who at that point was doing well in college, it was my time to live my life, right? Wrong. I felt unsettled, tireless, agitated. There are just too many of our Black children stuck in ambiguity and in the limbo of the foster care system. In 2017, I legally adopted my nephew, LaDarian. Fast forward to 2019, I had no ties to this other young king, but I felt God instructed me to adopt him also, and I obeyed. Starting over with parenting should have been enough, right? Working with various foster care and adoption agencies to help bring awareness to the countless young Black kings in the foster care system should have decreased my agitation, right? Joining the board of directors of Advantage Adoption, an organization that helps find permanent adoptive homes for children in foster care, should have led to some type of resolve, right? No, not at all. None of it felt like I had done enough. I now realize that every one of those experiences was laying the fundamental foundation for my life's mission, Kingdom Royale. Kingdom Royale will be a luxury state-of-the-art home for foster boys. Our first location will be in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. We will utilize the whole person approach that instills identity, empowers them to advocate for themselves, and enlightens them regarding new perspectives and limitless options that they thought were impossible. Though the young kings will attend the local public schools that are in proximity to Kingdom Royale, our at-home curriculum will broaden their worldview through participating in the arts, attending various cultural events, learning about and engaging in multifaceted discussions about current events and even relevant historical contexts, introducing them to gardening and landscaping and even caring for our animals on our farm and on-site stables. We just launched our startup capital campaign with the goal of raising $2.8 million. Now, why $2.8 million? Well, in 2017, I created a web series in which I performed random acts of kindness for targeting the homeless community. One of the most notable successes was that one of the videos went viral, garnering 28 million views. However, one of my biggest regrets is that I didn't raise a single dollar to help in implementing a more sustainable plan for the homeless community. So throughout the years, with much remorse, I reflected on not maximizing that moment. I knew if at that time, just 10% of the viewers donated $1, we would have raised at least $2.8 million that could have really established long-term support for the homeless community, or at least started a long-term initiative to do so. This is my do-over. This is our new beginning. Together, we can attack this at the root by specifically helping our homeless Black boys who are already disproportionately represented in the American foster care system. I'm LaTerrace R. Whitfield. I've been nominated for 3 regional Emmys documenting my work with the homeless as well as my personal adoption journey. Despite those accolades, the greatest award for me is truly providing the infrastructure for a transformed life. Visit KingdomRoyale.com for more details. Crown a king and make a donation today.
Wasn't this episode absolutely amazing? Man, what I love about this episode is that it shows God's divine intervention. We see his divine orchestration of his will, and we see the power of surrender. A lot of us don't feel or we don't have the heart posture of surrender. But when we truly surrender to the will of God, then we learn how to abase and how to abound, how to live with and how to live without. And then that's where God can show up and show out in our lives. But man, thank you, Tasha, for gracing the Dear Future Wifey podcast with your story of vulnerability and transparency. Well, here's my favorite part of the podcast where I speak to my future wifey. Dear Future Wifey, in a world where challenges seem to lurk around every corner, I've learned that it's not the absence of obstacles that defines our journey, but rather our response to them. There were times when the path seemed treacherous and the weight of uncertainty threatened to overwhelm me. Yet in those moments of doubt and fear, I found solace in surrendering to our Lord and Savior. Surrendering to the will of God doesn't mean giving up or resigning ourselves to fate. Instead, it's about acknowledging that there's a greater plan at work, one that we may not always understand or agree with, but one that ultimately leads us to where we need to be. It's about finding strength and faith and trusting that every obstacle we face is an opportunity for growth and transformation. I believe that our journey together will be marked by its own set of challenges, but I'm confident that with faith as our compass, we'll navigate through them hand in hand. Together, we'll face the storms that threaten to tear us apart, knowing that our love is steadfast and our bond unbreakable. Your future hubby.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Dear Future Wifey podcast. Remember, be lit, live intentionally and transparently, and don't stop loving.
Make sure to subscribe to our Dear Future Wifey YouTube channel. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We welcome your support. Simply share our podcast with your friends and family.